We are recording. Okay. We are in Perek Yud Zayin still. I think the last thing we did was we sort of read the introductory psukim that talked about the set up the two camps at Israel and the Plishtim and the concept of a kind of champion battle, champion conflict that would be a determination of the outcome of the war. Excuse me?
Representative
war by proxy. War by proxy. Yeah. And then we kind of digressed a little bit to talk about the location of this battle, and we had some fun with the internet and Google, all kinds of things. Make sure that actually is me, which is alright. So, which brings us back to Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Yud Bet. Before we get to Pasuk Yud Bet, I want to just make an observation comment about Pasuk Yud Aleph, or Pasuk. Pasuk Chet, and then Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayamod, vayikral ma'achot Yisrael vayomer lahem, lama tetzu larach milchama, halo anochi haplishti, v'yatem avadim l'sha'u, bru lachem ish. Why should we have to go out to fight? I am the Plishti, you are servants of Shaul. You pick your champion, let him come and fight me, and then the outcome will determine the outcome of this entire battle. And then he kind of throws in this curse. Pasuk Yud Vayomer Plishti Ani Cherafti Et Ma'achot Yisrael Layom Hazeh. Tnuli ish, send me a man, give me somebody. Let us fight together. We'll see in a little while that there's a 40-day standoff where they're waiting for a champion to show up. This isn't just one day, this is going on for 40 days. Shaul and the people of Israel heard these words of the Plishti, and they were frightened and trembling greatly. So I wanted to share with you an observation in the Mefarshim on the comment that Goyat makes specifically about Anochi HaPlishti. He says, I am the Plishti. What does that mean? So I share with you two comments, one in Rashi, one in the Radak, one in Rashi. Similar in approach, although they end up in a somewhat different place. I think a place that has a great deal of meaning for us. Radak reads the verse as follows. Halo anochi haplishti, klamar, ani plishti, echad min haplishtim. I am one of the plishtim, one of the Philistines. I happen to be one of them. What the Beit Chiddush is, I'm not sure. I think everybody knew that he was of the Philistine camp. I don't think anybody mistook him for anything else. But nonetheless, Yatzati me'atzmi kidei li'lachem. Says the Radak, he came out, meaning, I came out by myself. I'm not here by representative, meaning by mission. I wasn't sent by anybody. The king didn't send me. Yatzati me'atzmi, I decided this is my initiative. I've come. Anochi haplishti. Send me somebody. Vatem avadim leShaul klamar kivan sheyesh lachem melech. Since you have a king, I don't have a king. I just came out on my own. But you have a king. Since you have a king, hayalachem imalchem livorach mikem ish lachem imi. You, together with your king, should figure out who should come and fight with me. So the way the Radak reads these two phrases, anochi haplishti vatem avadim leShaul, is a kind of contrast. I'm here by myself. I don't have a king. I don't have somebody to send me. I don't have a, a nation. It's interesting, there is no, in this period of history, there are no kings of the Plishtim. You have Sanei Plishtim, you have governing rulers of each city, but we don't know of any individual known as Melech Plishtim. Later on we will, by David, we'll get to it. But we don't have any recognized individual here as who's identified as the king of the Plishtim. But you have a king, and therefore, because you have a king, you and your king go consult your council and your elders and whoever it is that you count that you consult with, and send me somebody. That's where the Radak reads this phrase. Rashi, on the other hand, reads the same phrase but with a slightly different twist. Halachi an aplishti, explains Rashi, eni. Lo samea velo sa elef, ela plishtim ki achad min acherim. Don't think that I am so special. I am not a general. I'm not a governor. I'm not a captain. I'm not one of the. I'm just one of the rank and file. Anochi a plishti. I'm an ordinary citizen of the people of the plishtim. And even though I have, you may know me, because I am a familiar face and a familiar name to you, says Rashi. I was the one who killed Chofni Pinchas in the battle back in Perek Dalet so many years ago when the Mishkan fell, and I was the one who captured the Ark back in Perek Dalet when the Aron was taken captive by the Philistines. Rashi, based on the Medrash, links Goliath to all of these previous engagements with the Plishtim. V'atem, in the course of this time, na'asitem avadim l'Shaul v'loshi etchem miyamav gebigvuato. And here you are, servants of Shaul. What has he done for you, says Rashi? In other words, the purpose, in Rashi's observation, the purpose of Goliath mentioning or identifying Shaul by name, less so as the Radak sees it, which is a kind of a go and consult with your king and figure out who you're going to send me, it's a kind of a taunt. It's a, here you are, we are the Plishtim, we fought you in Eben Ezer, I took your ark captive, I killed Chofni Pinchas, your Kohanim, and you have a king, okay? His name is Shaul. What has he done for you lately? What victories over the Plishtim has he brought about? Now, that is a very selective reading of history. Why?
He did fight the Plishtim,
and he did beat them back in Perek, Yud Gimel and Yud Dalet. Remember, it wasn't Shaul who fought the Plishtim in Perek Dalet. In Perek Dalet and Hay, when the Mishkan fell, and we had mounted a counteroffensive to push the Plishtim back, and then we really did take them out of the center of the country and push them all the way back south, that battle was led by Shmuel. Because that was before we had a king. Shaul's only engagement so far with the Plishtim has been the Battle of Michmas in chapters 13 and 14 with Yonatan, and that battle ended in a stalemate. The Plishtim went home, Israel went home. No territorial gains, but no losses, we were outnumbered and outgunned, and we ended in a stalemate, which is a good thing. We weren't defeated, but it wasn't necessarily a great victory. So he says to them, what has Shaul, your king, brought you in terms of victory over the Plishtim? Not much. And then he says, Tnuli Ish, send me somebody, a man. And here Rashi makes the observation that I think is very much in line with the tenor of the text, even though the text doesn't say it, which is that the Ish to which the Plishtim made reference isn't just anybody, but specifically Tnuli Ish et Shaul, the Yeredilai. Send me Shaul. In other words, the implication, he doesn't say it. He just says, send me a warrior, send me a champion. But everybody knows that if you're fighting a champion 7 feet tall, you want to send a champion who's at least got a fighting chance and who's also 7 feet tall. And the tallest of the warriors in Israel is the king who was chosen specifically because he was Mishichmo v'mala, gavoa mikol ha'am, higher, taller than everybody else. That's exactly why he was chosen in the first place, for this very reason.
I would have never been chosen.
So here's Saul sitting there with the army of Israel on a standoff of 40 days. The Plishti comes along, Goliath comes along, and he says, I am one of the warriors of the Plishtim. I fought many battles with Israel, and according to Rashi, he even makes reference to some of the earlier battles. You serve Shaul, your king, okay? Shaul is supposed to be a great warrior, he's supposed to be your great leader. Against the Plishtim, he hasn't fared so well to date. Tnuli ish, send me the man. Not a man, but the man, says Rashi, Shaul, and let him fight. And in that context, the concluding verse of this paragraph, Vayishma Shaul v'cho Yisrael et divrei Plishtim, doesn't say that Israel heard the words of the Plishti and reported them back to Shaul. It says, Vayishma Shaul v'cho Yisrael et divrei Plishti ele. Shaul and Israel heard these words. Shaul is front and center in that verse. Meaning that there's a, in accordance with, I think Rashi here hit on something very powerful. There is this implication in Goliath's words that he really was waiting for Shaul. And that the expectation was that the Melech would come out and fight this champion.
May I ask you a fundamental question?
You may.
What is so strange? Why is this all being done when you just said Anoki Aplishti? I mean, why is that so esoteric when you meet somebody? I mean, why are we taking that all apart just because one person said that?
Well, first of all, it's not just one person, and it's not just saying. This is part of his whole taunt of right? We're talking about a major speech where he comes out from the army, army against army, for 40 days there's a standoff, out comes the Philistine champion, Goliath, and he makes this big speech, 5 psukim long, in which he begins with this declaration, Anochi Aplishti. What does Anochi Aplishti mean? It's almost like Chaviochel, it sounds like Anochi Hashem Elokecha, right? It's a phrase that's odd. Of course he's a Plishti, where else? He just walked out of the camp. Yeah. So textually, I think that there's there's an emphasis on that statement that Mufarshim pick up. I'm less concerned with the phrase of Anochi HaPlishti as much as I think it's a prelude to the contrast, Nuli Ish. Who is the man that he was taunting Israel to send him? That's the major focus here, was Rashi says, the Radak says, it could be anybody, just go consult your king. Rashi sees in the reference to Shaul in the opening comment, Anochi Aplishti v'atem avadim l'Shaul, I, the Philistine, but you serve Shaul. That's the contrast. The reference to Shaul, the reference to Tnuli Ish, give me the man as Shaul, and then the concluding reference that Shaul and Israel were afraid. The emphasis here clearly is on the inactivity and the paralyzed fear, paralyzing fear that has overwhelmed Shaul. That's really the key piece to this speech.
And well, I think that makes the Anochi Aplishti at least sound right.
It also puts us into a position to compare Shaul's behavior from his starting point to his ending point. I mean, this is really the last. From here forward, our focus is going to be on David and on his role and the war that he's going to have with Shaul. But in terms of Shaul as king leading the army of Israel into battle, there are a couple of more episodes, but this is really the sort of the bookends of the story of Shaul, is the war with the Plishtim and Goliath, and in contrast, the war that he had with Yavesh Gilad. And there are a number of comparisons where Shaul started, which was the war with Yavesh Gilad, the war to protect Yavesh Gilad from the army of Ammon, back in chapter 11, which is, again, from a previous generation. But there are a number of parallels between or contrasts between these two battles, including the fact that the both battles start with a kind of a taunt by the king or the leader of the foreign power, in this case Goliath, and in that case it was Nachash, king of Ammon, who made this declaration: if you want to be my servants, if you want to surrender to me, I'll take your right eye, if you don't mind. And that was a way of, take a look, and I actually charted these differences out on the page that I just gave you, because it's just interesting to note. Back in Perek Yud Aleph, Nachash had said, "Vayomer aleihem Nachash Ammoni, b'zot echot lechem bin kol lechem kol ayin yamin, or kol ein yamin, I will agree to your terms if you each gouge out your right eye, v'samtia cherpa al kol Yisrael, and I will make it a disgrace for all of Israel." That phrase, v'samtia cherpa al kol Yisrael, is exactly the phrase that the Plishti uses, that Goliath uses, "Vayomer ha-Plishti, Ani cherafti et marachot Yisrael ayom hazeh. Tnu li ish v'nilacham hayachad. I belittle you, I despise you, I disparage you. There is it's a curse." So the same phrase, v'samtia cherpa, cherafti et Yisrael. The cheref and cherpa come from, even though they're different conjugations, but they're essentially the same word. Right. We talked about the time frame there too. They asked for 7 days. Here there's a 40-day standoff. But then you have the most critical difference, which is that that battle started when a man from amongst the people of Israel, who had been designated and anointed to be the king but had not yet assumed the throne. Remember, that was Shaul, who had been designated to be king, who had been anointed to be king, but went home. And it was only after that battle that the people really accepted him as their king. So he arose from amongst the people. Vatitzlach Ruach Elokim al Shaul. This Ruach Elokim embraced him in the spirit of courage and strength when he heard these words. Vayichar apo ma'od, got very angry. And he, that anger, motivated him to move into action and then to lead an army of Israel against Nachash, king of Ammon. That's how that battle was won. In our story, contrast to Shaul is dramatic. Vayishma Shaul v'chol Yisrael etivrei ha'plishti ha'ele vayichatu vayiru ma'od. Instead of the energy driven by this foreign power who would dare provoke Israel, belittle Israel, challenge Israel, and therefore he would arise to protect Israel, he's afraid. And he's so paralyzed by fear that he's unable to act. And to the contrary, who does act? Mm-hmm. A little man who's been anointed king, who hasn't yet assumed the throne.
That's a great shout-out.
Right? Vayomer David el ha'anashim ha'omdim imo lemor, ma yaseh li shishiyaket ha'plishti alaz ve'hisir cherpa me'al Yisrael. What is going to be who is going to stand up against this disgrace? How dare this plishti get up and disgrace the God of Israel? So the champion of the honor of Israel and the dignity of Israel and the honor of God is David, the designated one who has not yet assumed the throne. So the contrast here between our story and the role that Shaul played back in chapter, in the beginning of his story, back in chapter 11, is very powerful and gives us that moment of transition between Shaul on the one hand and David on the other. Okay. Questions on this? And then we're going to move to the next piece of the story.
Well, I don't remember if they were talking about that and Shaul king, that Goliath was the one who killed King Pinchas.
No, in the text it never says that. Again, that's the Midrash. Rashi, it's first of all, it's not a Shoftim, it's in Shmuel. Shmuel Perek Dalet. Fall of Shiloh is in Shmuel.
Okay, yeah, you're right.
It's a Medrash, but again, the Midrashim are designed, it's quite possible, the time frame would work. It's not the same generation. It's more or less the same generation. It might be 30 years later, 40 years later, it's unclear, but it's certainly the same generation, and it's certainly possible. But we don't know. There is one mystery in this story which I'm not going to address because I don't really have much to add to it. Maybe that's not true. And that is what happened to Yonatan. If Shaul is not here, David enters the picture. Who might I have expected after the Battle of Michmas? Who might I have expected to stand up against the champion Plishti and say, you know, hey, it's one against one. I took out of the whole garrison of Plishtim, one against 1,000. This is nothing. Where is Yonatan in the story? And he's not here. He's not here in the entire parak. So it's unclear where Yonatan is or why Yonatan's not here. It's possible that he's leading one of the army divisions of Israel, and they're just part of those camps that are on either side and not engaged. And this story is now becoming focused on David and Goliath, or Shaul, David and Goliath. It's also possible that for whatever reason, in the aftermath of the Battle of Michmas, where Yonatan was chastised by Shaul and criticized by him publicly after he broke the oath and took off the honey. Remember that story in the forest? It's possible that for whatever reason, Shaul has kind of pushed Yonatan aside a little bit and not given him any kind of significant role in order to not run into that problem. We don't know. What we do know is that when David enters into the picture after the Battle of Goliath, and after he becomes a general, or a warrior for Shaul, and after he fights many battles, and after he has this kind of elevated role, in the beginning of Perek Yudchet, the next Perek, it will talk about literally the first two psukim of Perek Yudchet, Vayiki chalato ledaber el Shaul, v'nefesh Yonatan nikshara v'nefesh David v'yaveh Yonatan kenafsha. That Yonatan was drawn to David, loved him, and they found in each other kindred spirit. Right? The warrior who's faithful to God and whose loyalty to God overrides everything else. And we'll see a number of comparisons between them. But you know, it's quite possible that it's the story of David and Goliath and his battle against the Plishtim that earns, and his faith in God that leads him in that context, that leads to the very unique and close bond between David and Yonatan. Not to mention that he will eventually become his brother-in-law. You have to always remember that David is married to, or will be married to, Michal Bachul, so it kind of changes all the pieces of the story. But that's right, that's literally the beginning of the next chapter. So whereas he's not in chapter 17, he's certainly there. He's certainly watching, he's certainly aware of everything that's going on, and there is this connection that is drawn between them.
So this is before he plays the harp for Shaul, or no?
I'm not even going to begin to address the chronology for another 2 to 3 weeks.
Okay.
I'm just working off the chapters as they are in sequence for now. Okay? There's a... We keep hitting on that issue, and we mentioned it 2 weeks ago also. It's a major issue in this perek, is the chronology, and the relationship between this story and Perek Tetzayin. For now, I'm taking them at face value in sequence, and for now, that's more than I...
We'll get back to that question.
Exactly. Park it, and we'll come back to it. Yeah.
When it says his soul, his nefesh became attached to Yonatan's nefesh, why is it nefesh? Like, what is it about?
That's just a way of describing two people who have as I use the expression, kindred spirit, which would be the English equivalent.
Okay.
Yehuda, when he describes Yaakov's love for Yosef, for Binyamin, and he defends Binyamin's, when he's standing talking to Yosef, defending Binyamin, who's been accused of stealing Yosef's cup. Am I putting us back in the right place?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, in that beginning of Parshat Vayigash, in that moment when he says, "How can I bring go back to my father without my brother Binyamin?" V'nafsho k'shura b'nafsho. His soul is linked to his soul. It's a way of describing a love and a deep love between individuals that is that makes them close enough that one would sacrifice for the other, would fight for the other. Father, son, in this case, between close friends, brothers-in-law. Nafsho k'shura b'nafsho.
Thank
you. All right. Back to Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Yud Bet. Part two of the story. Right, part one, army, Plishtif, champion, taunting Israel. Everybody's afraid. Nobody knows what to do. You can hear the tension. You can feel the tension. Part two. Once upon a time. So there's a dramatic shift in tone. The beginning of the second paragraph. V'David ben ish Ephrati azeh mi bet lechem Yehuda, shmo Yishai, v'lo shmona banim, v'ish bimei Shaul zaken baba anashim. David, son of a Ephrati person meaning from Ephrati meaning from Ephraim, or from the land of city of Ephrat, Beit Lechem in Shevet Yehuda. His name is Yishai. He has eight children. He's an older man. Baba Yamim, Baba Nashim. Vayalchu shloshet bnei Yishai agdolim malchu acharei Shaul milchama. Three of his older sons had gone with Shaul to battle, to war. V'shem shloshet banav ashelchu b'milchama Eliav ha-Bachor, Mishneu Avinadav, v'ashloshi Shama. His three oldest sons, Eliav, Avinadav, and Shama. V'David u'akatan. Youngest is David. U'shlosha ha-gdolim alchu acharei Shaul. And the older three, they followed Shaul into battle. David did not. V'David הולך ושב מאל שאול לראות את צון אביו בית לחם. So all the older boys are out there fighting the wars. David is not. He'll go back and forth, I guess, partially to look after the flock, partially to check on his brothers. He'll kind of go back and forth between the two, but he essentially is based at home. ויגש הפלישתי השכם והערב ויתייצב 40 יום. Back and forth, this Plishti day after day is coming out to taunt the camp of Israel, and this chubusha v'cherpa, this embarrassment, is going on for 40 days. Vayomer Yishai leDavid beno, kachna leachecha efat hakali hazeh v'asara lechem hazeh v'yareitz hamachanecha leachecha. David, my son, says Yishai, gathers together some food and provisions, some bread, some grain, and he says, go and take this quickly to the camp. Ve'ataseret chalitzei chalav ve'ela tavi l'sar ha'alef, bring some food for the general, for the captain of the army. Ve'atachecha tifkod l'shalom ve'atudubatam tikach. And as for your brothers, check on how they're doing. Give me a report on their well-being. I want to know that they're safe and sound. Tifkod l'shalom. V'shaul v'heima v'cholish Yisrael be'ema ka'ela nilchamim im plishtim. They, together with the melech, with Shaul and they and all of Israel, they're together fighting in Ema ka'ela with the plishtim. So before we get to the next verse, I just want to stop for a moment and look at the construct of these 5 psukim or 7 psukim. There's a remarkable, just textually, there's a remarkable transition that goes back and forth between two images. They are
David the shepherd and David the go-between.
Not David. You know, David the go-between, yes, but that's all part of David the shepherd. What's the other picture or image that's being played out in these two paragraphs?
The war.
The war. You have twice. It shifts our attention from the conversation between Yishai and David back to the war. Mm-hmm. Do you see that transition? Pasuk Yud-Bet, Yud-Gimel. Goes back. We're sitting in Beit Lechem. We're talking to Yishai. We're watching. We're getting a glimpse into the window of the Yishai's house. Yishai is talking to David. Three older sons have gone off to war. Yishai is worried about them. He calls in David, the little shepherd, who goes back and forth with the food, and he looks after the flock. And he says to him, "You know what? Your brothers have gone to war. Hey, gosh! In the meantime, in Emek Ha'elah, for 40 days, the Plishti is taunting Israel." And then Yishai says to his son, "Listen, take some food, go check on your son, your brothers, bring me back a message of peace, tifkot l'shalom. I take some food for the captain, they're in the army, they're hungry, bring some presents. You know, if you have a chayal in the army, you bring him some food, because that's what you do, right? So bring him some food. V'sha'ul v'hema v'chol yishra v'hema kaila nilchamim in plishtim, and they're fighting with the plishtim." The contrast, twice it does that. Once is enough. But twice, in the middle of the paragraph describing the conversation between Yishai and David, it shifts our attention to
the war.
And I think it's self-evident. I think there's this contrast that's being built, or image, of the almost the naivete, the simplicity, the beauty of the young child who's serving his father, who's looking after his father's flock, who's going to see his brothers, who's checking on their well-being. Kind of the simple, naive, wonderful, beautiful David is looking, kibbut ha'aim. And then there's this war going on. And all of Israel is sitting there frightened because the champion of the plishtim is taunting Israel. And this goes back and forth. And it's all a setup to understanding how David enters into the fray. Pasuk Chaf. Hashkem David baboker, vayitosh et hatzon al shomer. David got up in the morning. What does it mean, vayitosh et hatzon al shomer? Vayitosh is to
his job to somebody else.
Right. He handed over the sheep to somebody to guard the flock. He wasn't going to abandon his post, so to speak. He can't just leave the flock without a shepherd. But his father sent him to check on his brothers, so he took the flock. And he gave it over to a shomer, and he said, "Okay, you look after it." Why that's relevant, we'll see in a minute. Vayisa vayelech kasher tzivah Yishai. And he went, again, this simple, naive, beautiful description. He went as he was instructed, as he was commanded. You have to ask yourself, why is it so significant here? Over and over again, he's commanded, he's instructed, so he did what he was told, and he went.
The same language from Abraham. Me'ashkem
Avraham baboker. By the Akedo. But this phrase, Vayisa ve'ilach v'kasher tzivahu Yishai, ve'yavo ha'magala, ve'achayel ha'yotzei al ha'maracha, ve'yareu b'milchama. So David approaches the camp. And now as he's approaching, you hear and feel the battle. These two camps of Israel and the Plishtim in a standoff, weeks upon weeks. The Plishtim champion, Goliath, standing there taunting Israel. You can feel the tension of the battle.
Were they fighting then?
No, it's a standoff.
Waiting for somebody to show up.
Totals. I mean, they may have fought in the earlier part of the battle. Uh-huh. There might be a point in that we don't know. Uh-huh. But there's clearly a war going on, and now there's this standoff. V'taroch Yisrael uflishtim maracha likrat maracha. Say it again. Pasuk Aleph. Standoff. Army against army. That just builds the tension. So David approaches. Vayitosh David et hakelim mi'alav. Ayad shomer akelim, v'yarotz ha'malacha. David comes in, has his I guess his water canteen and his travel clothes and whatever else. He gives it to the shomer at the gate, and he goes running to the battlefield. Why does Vayavo Vayishal Le'achav L'Shalom? And the first thing he does is checks on his brothers to check how they're doing. Tens Eliyah, Tens Abinadab, Tens Tishama. How are you? Baruch Hashem, everything well, you're well, nobody's hurt, father's worried about you, fine, everything's good, David, go, everything's great, you can tell daddy we're all good. V'umedaber imam. And as he's speaking with them, with whom?
His brothers.
V'hinei ish ha-beinayim oleh. Goliat ha-plishti shmo. Migat mi-marchot plishtim. Up comes the brutality of it. The brute. Goliat ha-plishti. Migat. From the camp of the plishtim. Va'idaber kadvarim e'ela. And he gave his daily announcement. Right? Cherafti et marachot Yisrael. I despise you. I curse you. I spit on you. I... Cherfot marachot Yisrael. Ve'ishma David. David heard. V'chol, and as we've seen over again, it's a second time, v'chol ish Yisrael b'yiratam ata ish v'yanusu mipana v'yirum od. It's a daily occurrence. Goliath would stand up, make a speech, and everybody who is standing there ready to go, let's go, let's go, let's go, let's go, let's go, let's fight. Goliath would stand up and then go running home. It's kind of like the little scurry of the soldiers out into the battlefield. Goliath would stand up and then go scurrying back. Vayu'umot. Vayomer. Ish Yisrael. And then they would turn. Ish Yisrael is the army of Israel, meaning one to another. They would speak to each other and they would say, Ha'ra'item, can you see it? Look at this guy. Look how tall he is. Ha'ish ha'oleh hazeh, this guy coming up, which is a double entendre, right? It's a pun, because he's coming up from the camp, but he's also tall. Ha'ish ha'oleh hazeh, he's towering, this towering man rising above us. Ki l'charefet Yisrael oleh. He's coming up to taunt Israel, to berate Israel, to curse Israel. And it's so devastating that the king has made an offer, and nobody, look at the price the king is willing to pay, and look at the champion from Israel, what the prize he could win. V'yayah ha'ish ha'shiyakenu ya'ashrenu ha'melech osher gadol. The person who wins this battle, who fights this champion, the king is going to make him very wealthy. And he's going to give him his daughter for marriage. He's going to make him the prince of Israel. And he's going to make his father's household free in Israel. Now that's a comment that needs just a word of explanation. The Plishti had accused Israel of being avadim l'Shaul. And here Israel, right, servants or slaves to Shaul. Here the chofshi means free. It's the opposite of an eved. But that's not the meaning of the phrase here, right? Because they weren't really avadim l'Shaul. They were in the sense of servants to Shaul, but not avadim. So what is chofshi b'Yisrael? I'll make his household chofshi in Israel. So my farshim explained, I think it's very, very, very correct, that the chofshi here is a reference to taxes. As you make the person very wealthy, you give him the king's daughter in marriage, and you exempt his family from any taxes. What a prize! The wealth of the kingdom.
The daughter
of the king.
No taxes.
That's a triple whammy.
How do you know that Shaul is saying that?
We don't per se. No, Shaul hasn't said it. This is what people are saying has been offered. This is the offer. This is what is the people of David is hearing a conversation. He's overhearing a conversation amongst the soldiers who are saying, here's the Plishti. Nobody's standing up to fight him. It's a 40-day standoff. The king has given away the store to the guy who's going to win this battle.
Because he obviously doesn't want to fight.
Who?
The king.
He's afraid to fight. The people are afraid to fight. This is all a reflection of that same fear. And since nobody's standing up to do it, the king keeps making the prize bigger. So it starts with a medal, and then it goes to wealth, and then it goes to the daughter's hand in marriage, and then when that doesn't work, then he says, okay, I'll make your household free from taxes, right? We'll give your family some this is all. And you feel the tension. Vayomer David el ha'anashim ha'omdim imo lemor. Maya sel isha shiaketa plishti halaz? So David turns to the people who are standing there, and he says to them, say again. What's going to happen to the guy who fights to the fellow who fights this champion, who fights this Goliath? Why does he ask that question? He just heard it. It says that he heard.
He wants to make sure he knows.
Right? I think he wants to double check his facts, right?
Yeah.
So he heard it from one person. Go and ask somebody else. And go and ask somebody else. Remember, he's not in the army. He hasn't seen the posters posted, wanted, dead or alive. Right? He hasn't seen the prize posters being, the reward for Goliath's head posters on the door. And he's just walking into the camp for the first day. He hears two people talking about it. So he wants to verify the facts. This is remarkable. All you have to do is take down Goliath, and you get to marry the king's daughter and become wealthy. How good is that? It's easy.
Good if you survive.
Yeah, well, David thinks it's easy. Now, here's the core of the issue. David hears Goliath's speech. And he turns to people and he says, what's being offered to the guy who takes down this Goliath? Remove this scourge from upon Israel? This plishti? Everybody's sitting here so afraid of this guy? This manuvel? Who is this uncircumcised plishti, this nothing, this menuvel, this oisvarf, this Philistine who thinks he can curse God? Now, in that sentence, David has said something remarkable but subtle. He's shifted the taunt of Goliath. Because twice Goliath has said, Cherefti et Marchot Yisrael. Mm-hmm. Back in Pasuk Pasuk Yud, V'yomer Aplishti, Ani Cherefti et Marchot Yisrael Hayom Hazeh. I curse the camp of Israel this day. And we saw it again. In Pasuk Chaf Hei, Vayomer Ish Yisrael, Hara Item Ha'ish Ha'oleh Hazeh, Ki Lecharef Et Yisrael Oleh. Every day he comes up to curse and taunt Israel. And what does David say?
What does a person get that kills this guy?
No, that's the first half of the pasuk. What's the second half of the pasuk? Where he quotes essentially
disgusting.
The phrase of this plishti, and he says, "Ki mi a plishti avel hazeh, ki cheref marachot." It's a paraphrase of Goliath's words, right? With one small subtle difference, ki cheref marachot Elohim chayim. He's cursed the army of the living God. Meaning, what David has brought into the equation is
God.
Everybody's so concerned about the fact that Goliath is standing there taunting Israel and disparaging Israel and making Israel feel belittled. David doesn't see Goliath the champion and Israel disparaged. What David sees is the Chilul Hashem fact. Can never forget that the army of Israel represents God on the battlefield. And there's the Chilul Hashem in this equation that's unconscionable and intolerable. How do you let the plishti stand up every day, Goliath, and curse not Israel. It's not about Israel. It's not about our dignity. Cheref marachot Elohim chayim. He's cursing God. And people are just okay with that? How do you let this go on?
It was striking to me that he said it's uncircumcised.
Yeah, so that's a description of the Plishtim often. They used that description. It's a sort of a pejorative of the non-Israelite Gentile world at the time, but in particular the Plishtim, because of their brute character, it's kind of a... We had it by Shimshon.
Yeah, I remember.
Mm-hmm. Same, the, mm-hmm. When Shimshon came back to his parents and he said, I found a Isha Matzati Bibno Plishtim, and they turned to him and they say, Ha'en Bibnot Yisrael Isha Ki Yata Lekech Olech Likat Lekach Isha Mibnot Ha'arelim. There's nobody kosher in your eyes in the Jewish world that you have to go and take a daughter of an uncircumcised Philistine. Remember, it's a girl, so it's not circumcised. She's not circumcised, but she's the Benot Ha'arelim, because the whole culture is described that way. It's kind of a pejorative for the Gentile world. If you, in modern Yiddish culture, you'd use the term a goy or other pejoratives that are a little bit more offensive. In this context, it's a way of balancing the fear that Israel is experiencing at the hands of this Plishtim. And David looks at him and says, "I don't see fear. I see a warrior. I see an arel. I see an outsider. I see a Gentile. I see this manuvel cursing Israel and thereby cursing God and creating a chilul Hashem. And it's intolerable." That's what David sees.
You also seem to imply that this paragraph, to me, it wasn't so strange. So they talked about this or that a couple of times, but you seem to imply that this paragraph here is not quite right, and that there's something wrong with it.
Which?
In the description. I mean, that's the feeling I got when you were talking. Now, to me, it sounded like a very interesting description. You know, this happens and this happens, and went along.
You mean the back and forth between the house of David and the house of the battle?
Yeah, why should that be so bothersome?
Because it's redundant. We already had it. We know that the camp of Israel is fighting, and we know that now we've shifted gears to the house of David, the house of Yishai. And yet we go back to the description of the battlefield, then we go back to the conversation with Yishai, then we go back to the battlefield, then we go back to David's journey. Not really. I mean, that kind of back and forth is not, and if it does, then it needs to be identified and significant. Pasuk of Zayin. So, in answer to David's question, Vayomer lo ha'am, people of the people, members of the people, he's not talking to the whole nation, he's talking to various people, and they said, Katavaze, told him exactly what they had yet heard, or that they were saying amongst themselves, Koyasel isha she'akenu. He'll be given a prize, he'll be given money, he'll be given the king's hand in marriage, his household will be freed from taxes. Veishma Eliyav achiv hakadol bedabro al anashim. So Eliyav overhears a conversation between David and these other people. Veicha af Eliyav bedavid. Eliyav gets angry. Vayomer, lama ze yeradata? What did you come down to the army for? What did you come here for? Ve'al mi natashta me'at hatzon ha'ene bamidbar? And abandon your sheep. Abandon your role as the shepherd, right? What did you do with your flock of sheep back home? You left them to wander the fields of the Midbar? How dare you? What are you doing here? Ani yadati yitzdoncha. I know your iniquity, your zedon, your intention. V'droa levavecha, the evil in your heart. L'man rota melchama yaradata. You just wanted to watch the war. You wanted to have fun. You wanted to sit there and watch. You go back to your sheep, you David, you.
Sibling rivalry never dies.
How true.
Vayomer David, me'asiti ata? Lo davaru? What did I do? I'm just speaking. I'm just asking a question. I didn't do anything. It's a really remarkable response to the taunt of Eliyav, which is really extraordinary. Me'asiti ata lo davau means this is nothing. I didn't mean anything by it. It's just speech. It's just words, meaning it's insignificant. What are you getting so upset about? I just ask a question. What doesn't he tell him? Right, that he's thinking of?
Fighting.
Fighting Goliath. Right? That he is waiting for somebody to stand up to fight Goliath. If nobody else will do it, he'll do it. But Goliath is the older brother, the oldest of his brother, the champion, the warrior, the captain in the army. He says to him, "What are you doing here, David? Go back to your sheep." And David says, I'm just inquiring.
But that kind of plays in how they made him up until this point asses. He's just the shepherd. He's just,
right?
You know, the
innocent guy coming in, listening, hearing, watching, but with a deep sensitivity to the one piece of the story that nobody else has picked up on, which is the Chilul Hashem factor here. Chirev Marachot Elokim Chaim. That's the piece that David brings to the equation that has been lost to everybody else.
It's also pretty mean on the brother's part because he's bringing them food and supplies.
You sort of get the sense that the brothers don't like him.
Sort of being bullied.
It's like
being bullied by his brothers?
Yeah. Oh.
So we're going to talk about Yosef. We're going to spend some time talking about Yosef. Because the parallels to the story between David and Yosef here are just beginning to surface now to the top, and there are a gazillion of them. So we're going to have to pick up on that.
And you don't want to talk about the chronology about if his brother had seen him anointed and everything. How
no,
did he talk
not yet.
To him like that?
Not yet. I'm going to assume everything is as straight as it comes. But yes, the questions are mounting, right? The questions are mounting. We keep piecing pieces of the questions, and we'll see the most dramatic part of that question at the end of the parak, but one step at a time. Vayisov mi'etzlo emul acher. So after he finished talking to Eliav, well, he's talking to somebody, Eliav hears, Eliav scolds him for it, and he sort of turns to his older brother and he says, "I'm just asking questions, leave me alone." Goes away. Vayisov mi'etzlo emul acher. So he goes and he turns to somebody else. And he tells him the same thing. He asks him the same question. And he hears the same answer. So by the time this goes back and forth, he figures out that this is really the issue. And he keeps asking. And so we come to Pasuk Lamed Aleph. David's words were, it's an interesting grammatical structure, vayishamu, they were
heard.
So they bring him before Shaul, and now he's standing before Shaul. So I really wanted to focus on the story of David and the parallel to Yosef, but since we're here, let's just do three more psukim or four more psukim. We'll kind of come to the end of this piece, and then we'll go back. Vayomer David el Shaul, Al yipol lev adam alav, avdecha yelech v'nilcham im haplishti hazeh. David says to Shaul, "Don't worry, nobody fret." Al yipol lev adam alav. Nobody should be afraid. Your servant, meaning me, I will go fight this plishti. Vayomer Shaul al David, lo tuchal alechat al plishti al azeh lilachem imo, ki na'ar ata, v'hu ish milchama minorav. You, David, you are a na'ar. Not a fool, but a lad, and a young man. And this is a trained warrior. Ish milchama minorav. From his days as a na'ar, he was a warrior. You are a shepherd. You go back to your sheep and leave the war to those who are trained to be warriors. It's just ironic because Shaul started as a shepherd. But Vayomer David o Shaul. So David says to him, Ro'eh ayav decha laviv batzon. Your servant, I was my father's shepherd for his flock. And I'll tell you a story. Uva ari vetadov, There was once a time when a lion and a bear came and they grabbed a sheep from my flock. I ran after that beast. And I smote the beast. I took the se out of his mouth. He came and attacked me. I grabbed his beard. Lion has a beard. I smote the lion and I killed him. Almost Shimshon style. I, your servant, smote the lion and the bear. This plishti is no different than one of them. How dare he disparage and curse the army of the living God? Well, there are actually, right, so separate from this discussion, actually it's a very interesting question.
Well, it's so odd.
Right, lion and bears typically don't roam the fields of Emek HaElah, or Beit Lechem. Let me just one more sentence and I'm going to come back to the lion and bear. It's a very interesting question. Vayomer David, to which he finally says, Hashem asher tzilenu miyad ariv miyad adov, miyad tzilenu miyad plishti hazeh. God who saved me from the hands of the ari and the dove, God can save me from the hands of this plishti. I'm not worried. Okay, says Shaul, Vayomer Shaul David, lech v'Hashem yeimach, may God be with you. The rest of the story will leave for another time. The lion and the bear is a really interesting question. And the reason why it's so interesting is because it dovetails into something we talked about. When did we do Sefer Yehoshua?
Many years ago. And we met at Epstein.
That's right.
That I remember.
Part of the time was here. Part of the time was here. Yehoshua took us 2 years. It's an interesting question. And I'll tell you where...
It was a while ago.
I'll tell you why it's so interesting. Because there are a number of indications, there's no explicit reference, but there are a number of indications scattered throughout Nevi'im Rishonim, that in the time that we're talking about, there was a much larger, substantial forest bordering on a jungle area around what is referred to in the Navi as Ya'ar Ephraim. Yar Ephraim is the forest area that covers the west side of the Yarden and the east side of the Yarden in Shevet Ephraim and Shevet Menashe. It's the area around the Yabok River, Machanayim, which is actually in this week's Pasha, we did. And we talked about it when we talked about the crossing of the Yarden.
Yeah,
way back when.
But I remember.
So why they needed to cross the Yarden so miraculously. And one of the theories that suggested was because the Yarden in those days was much bigger. And it had to have been much bigger in order to sustain the kind of forested area that could sustain, that could maintain wild animals. There's a pasuk, for example, in Chumash that talks about the conquest of the nations of Canaan and says that I will not conquer the nations of Canaan quickly, but rather slowly over time. Pen yirbu elecha chayata sadeh. Lest the beasts of the fields overwhelm you. Now, there are no wild beasts like lions and tigers and bears in Yair Yerushalayim, right? They just aren't. Because to sustain the kind of ecosystem necessary for those kinds of wild animals, you need large space of forested area like a jungle, and you just don't have it in Israel today. You don't have enough water in Israel today to sustain that. So the theory comes to a couple of points, which is that, number one, there are references to Chayot HaSadeh in Psukim and Chumash. You have the story of Avshalom, when Avshalom goes running into Yar Ephraim to escape David's wrath, or David's army, and they go chasing after him. Remember, Avshalom gets... We haven't gotten to it here, but I'm sure you know the story where he's running through the trees and the tree grabs him by the hair and he gets literally hanged by the hair. In that story, it says that more people died by the forest than by the sword. which is a really interesting phrase. Excuse me?
Just thinking about the Israel Museum, maybe they could do some kind of display about all
this. Right, so these are all conjectures. We don't know for sure. It's like, it's just a mystery, but it's, if you take a look in Shmuel Bet, Perek, I think it's impossible. In Perek Yudchet, Shmuel Bet Perek Yudchet. I'll tell you in a second. Right, so this is where Avshalom, running away from David, he runs to Machanaim. He runs into Yar Ephraim. I'll tell you in a minute. Towards the beginning of the Perek. Pasuk Vav. Let's start from Pasuk Vav. Vayetze ha'am asadeh likrat Yisrael. Right, so David's army. Right, Shmuel Bet, 18:6. Vayetze ha'am asadeh likrat Yisrael. Israel's army goes to fight, or the David's army goes to fight Avshalom's army. That the milchama be'Yar Ephraim. The war took place in, across the Yarden, in Yar Ephraim, the other half of Yar Ephraim. Yar Ephraim spans the both sides of the Yarden River. Vayinakfu sham am Yisrael lifnei avdei David, and that's where Avshalom's army was defeated. Vatehi sham magifa gdola b'yam ahu 20,000 people died that day. Vatehi sham hamilchama nafotzet al pnei kol haaretz. The war spread in the land. Vayerev hayar le'achol ba'am me'asher achla hacherev bayamahu. The forest consumed more people than the sword. What is the forest consuming people? So we're not talking about Harry Potter and the Lord of the Rings trees that move and eat people. Right? What is the forest consuming people more than the sword? So it could be a reference to getting lost and dying of dehydration, who knows? Or the theory that I'm suggesting, which is that that the forest was much bigger, and that there was a period of time when there were wild beasts in this area, and therefore not so uncommon for somebody like David to say to Shaul, an dove came and attacked my flock. So, very interesting question. It's like one of those references that's a window into a whole different conversation, but nonetheless an important conversation.
So kind of gives us a place.
Right, today you wouldn't find lions and tigers and bears and walking through the streets of Yerushalayim or Bethlehem.
Is true. Like a transformation, because he's going from like being this played as this naive weakling little
right.
And then so it's either he's fighting lions and tigers and
right.
bears, you know.
So either it's a transformation, or we are presented with the picture of David, which isn't really a true reflection of who David was. Meaning that we are presented the picture of David as perceived by
his brothers.
So we're getting the glimpse of David, the little shepherd who comes, Nudnik brother, who comes into the field and starts asking questions, and the brothers turn to him and says, "Go home, you Nudnik. Right? You don't belong here. You're a scrawny little kid. You don't belong in the army." Okay, and what we are seeing at the end is that this David is quite the warrior in his own way. But like so many, you have to fight in your own style, and suddenly he's a man of faith. He's a man of great depth. He's a man of deep conviction, love of Israel, will stand up for the dignity of Israel when nobody else will. The conversation he has with Shaul is so dramatically different than the conversation his brothers have, or he has with his brothers, where he says to him, "Sorry, I'm just asking questions. No harm done in asking questions. It's only speech." And then he comes to Shaul and he says, I can take care of this. Why? Because God forbid this Chil Hashem can't be tolerated. There's a contrast between two very different pictures, not because these two personalities, but because there's a hidden part to David, right? David is the poet. David is this musician. David is the shepherd. You know, picture little Bo Peep sitting under a tree with his flute and the sheep in front of him. That's the image that we get, or that's the image that the brothers would like us to see, until he stands up and fights. So there's this constant tension between the two sides of David's personality. And we saw that at the very beginning in the Admonim Im Yafei Naim. And he's a complex personality. He is a shepherd, and he is a poet, and he is a musician, and he is the artist, and he is all of those things. But he's also a warrior.
You know, shepherds are really pretty tough people. I mean, they're not meek little Bo Peeps. I mean, they're tough. They're living in a tough environment. They're protecting their flocks against predators, against thieves. Now they're out by themselves. I mean, they're tough people.
Right. And I think that's the image that David conveys to us, not the image necessarily that the brothers saw in the perception that there's warriors and then there's shepherds. It goes back to Mitzrayim, where Yosef says to his brothers, tell them that you're shepherds because we don't want them to draft you into the army. We want you to go and be able to tend to your flock in Mitzrayim, or go back to Yaakov and Esav, where Yaakov is the shepherd and Esav is the hunter, and two very different personalities presented in contrast. One Admoni and the other is the shepherd. Well, David is both, and that's really unique in this image. So yes, there is this perception that the shepherd is the contrast to the hunter warrior is the shepherd.
How old is he?
We don't know. But he reigns for a total of 40 years, and he dies at the age of 70. So how many years between here and the time that Shaul dies is unclear.
Okay, so it's got to be between 20 and 30.
Yeah, or it could be 18. I mean, it's a nar. So he's still, I mean, technically, a nar halachically is 12, but I don't think he's 12. He's probably in his mid-teens, a little bit older. Certainly old enough to maybe 17. That would fit, right? I know another boy who was 17 who was called a Na'ar. Who Na'ar b'nei Bilhav b'nei Zilpah, the Yosef and Shvas Reishana. Right? Yosef was 17 when he was called a Na'ar in the story of Yosef going to see his brothers to bring them, to bring back his father a message of their well-being. And ends up being attacked by their brothers because they didn't like him very much. Sound familiar?
Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right.
He used that phrase, Maya Selaish. I mean,
it's sort of reminiscent of Megillat Esther. Yeah, it has that ring to it.
Said that.
Yeah, there are there's a separate parallel to Megillat Esther, which I'm not sure we're going to get to much, but there are a couple of references that look that ring of Megillat Esther. When he says, when Shmuel said to Shaul that the kingdom will be given to what's the phrase? He says, you give the melech le'recha tov mimecha, or something to that effect. Which is also a phrase that is reminiscent of a phrase in Megillat Esther. Can't find it right now, but it's a... So there's a number of these.
When you said it, that's the first thing that came to my head.
Kara Hashem et mamlechut Yisrael me'alech hayom unetana le'reacha hatov mimecha. That also is a phrase that is in Megillat Esther. So there are a number of phrases, but I'm much more intrigued by the connection to Yosef And there's also a connection between Yosef and the Megillah as well, but and Hanukkah as well. I mean, if we really wanted to, there's a number of we can connect lots of dots. But we're going to pick up from Yosef, because Yosef, as a parallel to the story of David, Yosef is a really fascinating conversation, and we will pick that up as Rosh Hashanah next week.
Last week when you showed Emek Ayala on the
video? On the screen?
Yeah.